Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Well, Vladimir Zelensky has told the BBC he's still ready to sign a US-Ukraine minerals deal after leaving the White House without it being agreed. The Ukrainian president insisted he is still willing to have a constructive dialogue with the United States despite that explosive showdown with the US President Donald Trump in the Oval Office on Friday. So what is next for US-Ukraine relations? Let's speak first to James Landale, BBC diplomatic correspondent. Good morning, James.
Good morning.
Now, Keir Starmer has said he has this four-point plan for peace in Ukraine. He is apparently going to pitch this to Donald Trump. So what can you tell us about it? What's in it? Will it be enough to sway the American president after that face-off on Friday with Vladimir Zelensky?
Essentially, this plan has two parts. One is to try and beef up Ukrainian support as much as possible now in terms of keeping the flow of European aid in terms of military support, in terms of financial support, as much as possible to put, as the Prime Minister says, Ukraine in the strongest possible position ahead of any negotiations. But it is also a plan to try and come up with a proposal that will get the Americans back on side after that astonishing row in front of the media between Mr. Zelensky and Mr. Trump in the White House last week. And what the British-French plan is, this is essentially to say, look, European nations have to do more, not just in terms of spending on their defense, but also in terms of working to try and guarantee any future security of a post-war Ukraine. In other words, at the moment, the French and the British have said they're prepared to put military boots on the ground. I think there'll be a coalition of the willing, to use the Prime Minister's phrase, of more countries to make offers like that, so that the Europeans can then go back to the Americans and the Trump administration and say, look, we are stepping up here, but we need you to step up too, because for this security guarantee to have any teeth to deter future Russian aggression, it just needs American support. In other words, air cover, intelligence, logistics, and things like that. So I think what we've seen is the Europeans stepping up and attempting to take a little bit of ownership of this process so that they can go back to the Americans with a proposal that they hope will win some favour in the White House.
And James, there were reports last night coming from France that Emmanuel Macron had this plan for a temporary truce or ceasefire. He seemed to suggest that this had been proposed and agreed by the UK and France. But now I see this morning that the Armed Forces Minister Luc Pollard is saying that has not been agreed. What can you tell us about this?
Look, I think lots of ideas and options were tossed around at the meeting in London at Lancaster House. And I think this idea of a one-month partial truce was one of those. As I understand it, and, you know, it's very much an idea, the idea would be that the Ukrainians and the Russians would agree a partial truce that would cover air operations, sea operations, and any operations around energy infrastructure. But it would not cover ground fighting along the front line in the east. And according to, you know, what Mr. Macron said, it would be a way of, and this has been echoed by the French foreign minister in interviews this morning, would be a way of testing Russia's good faith. Mm-hmm. If Russia was willing to take part in and not violate a partial truce, then that would be a demonstration of good faith that would allow longer-term negotiations for a longer-term peace to begin. Also, I suppose, and this is me speculating rather than relying on the French here, because this is clearly a half-formed idea, if you had a temporary truce, that would be an early victory for the Americans. And Mr. Trump could say, look, I've already made a difference. I've already stopped some of the fighting on the ground. So that might be a way of enticing the Americans back into the game. Mm-hmm. But as you say, British officials are saying, look, this is just an idea. This was not an agreed position. Of course, anything like this utterly depends on, what the Russians want to do. And there's absolutely no signal yet that the Russians would be willing to entertain anything like this.
Well, it's interesting that you mention, you know, this might give Donald Trump some sort of a win, because this diplomatic balancing act, the high wire act, I mean, we see Europe now, and in particular the UK's Keir Starmer taking a lead role over the weekend on this. But they've got to be really careful, because Donald Trump has owned the diplomatic stage over the last number of weeks, and he might be very put out by these developments over the weekend.
Well, yes and no. I think Mr. Trump has made it very clear that he wants there to be an end to the fighting in Ukraine. Now, there is a lot of disagreement over what terms, under what terms that fighting would end. But it seems pretty clear that he does want the fighting to end, simply so that the United States can turn its attention elsewhere to the Far East and China. So anything that I think helps that, I think his administration, in theory, could support. And I think the idea of the Europeans stepping up and doing more, and essentially what the Americans, the Europeans are trying to do is say, look, you, America, have asked us to step up and do more, both in terms of our defence spending, but also in terms of, securing Ukraine's future. The Prime Minister made it very clear that Europe should do the heavy lifting. I think what the Europeans are trying to do is say to the Americans, look, we are doing the heavy lifting. You're just the icing on top of the on top of the cake, so that the American commitment is seen as just that small extra edge, rather than the fundamental pillar on which any kind of future deterrence would be based. Now, whether Mr. Trump is swayed by that remains to be seen, because in all public utterances last week, he made it very clear that he trusts Donald Trump, unlike most other European leaders, not to violate any peace deal. And secondly, he thinks that security guarantees that are economic rather than military would suffice. In other words, the presence of American firms and mining workers on the ground digging for critical minerals would be enough to deter Mr. Putin in the future.
Mm-hmm. And just coming back then to the standing of President Zelensky, I mean, we saw that European leaders were very keen and did throw their arms around him at the weekend after he returned to Europe, James. But how do you assess where he is now after that meeting with Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and how it turned out? Is he safe in his position?
I think the idea that President Zelensky is going to go just because he's had a row with Mr. Trump, I think is unlikely. He has made clear himself that he would be prepared to stand down if in return Ukraine gets membership of NATO. I think both options are very, very slight at the moment. But I think what Mr. Zelensky would have done when he left to head back to Kiev is he would have left knowing that the Europeans have his back and have full support. I mean, all the body language and all the actual language was incredibly supportive. But equally, I think he will probably also have gone back, having been told privately, look, you have to mend fences with this White House. I interviewed the president of Finland yesterday. And I asked him whether or not Mr. Zelensky should eat humble pie. And Mr. Stubb said that he liked English pies but would never recommend anybody whether they should or should not eat them. Okay. But he did it with a little twinkle in his eye. In other words, that the signals from all the European leaders that we've spoken to is that fences have to be mended here, and that's going to involve a degree of attempting to kiss and make up.
And in that press conference that President Zelensky held last night, he did seem to confirm that there is some contact happening between the Ukrainian government and the White House, but not at his level. Is there any sense, or what are you hearing coming from Washington, is there any sense that they are willing to de-escalate tensions with Ukraine?
Well, privately, diplomats say that they think the Americans are willing to do that. Marco Rubio, the US Secretary of State, yesterday gave an interview in which, he put the boot into Mr. Zelensky a couple of times, accusing him of Ukraine-splaining to the Americans, which is a new one. But equally, he also emphasized that the last line of President Trump's social media post after that row on Friday was that the US remained open to engage with Ukraine when it was ready to seek peace. And so Mr. Rubio emphasized that the diplomatic door was still open. But at the same time, in the same breath, almost, the US National Security Advisor was again putting the boot into Mr. Zelensky, saying that, he would have to stand down as part of any peace treaty. So, you know, as ever from the Americans, mixed messages. Interpreting what this White House does at the moment is quite complex because its messaging is not consistent.
James Landell, BBC diplomatic correspondent, thank you for that. Well, I'm joined now by Errol Moore Coach, who's spokesman for Republicans Overseas UK, and Donnacho Bacon, Professor of Politics at the DCU School of Law. And you're both welcome. Errol, I'll start with you. And you might have heard James there making reference to a tongue-in-cheek comment from the Finnish leader about humble pie. Do you think President Zelensky needs to eat some?
You know, I do, and I think I agree with a lot of what the prior caller said in general. I mean, he needs to step up and read the room. This is not a situation where he can play the same character he's been playing. And in the end, he's dealing with a Donald Trump and a J.D. Vance who were sent by an American electorate who want this war to come to an end. And these are the people whose tax dollars are funding the war. So it would behoove Mr. Zelensky to read the room better, perhaps dress for the occasion better, and come in a little bit more respectful in the way that Donald Trump likes to operate. And I think that's something that would go a long way. This deal is far from being blown up and being finished. Zelensky can come back. This is really about sitting down and signing that rare earth deal that he seems to be reluctant to sign. So once we get to that point, I think everything can be ameliorated.
He's leading a country at war, Errol. What did you think? Can you explain to us what you thought was wrong with how he was dressed?
Well, I think it speaks to just a disrespect for the office. I mean, he calls the suit a costume when you know, he's not on the front lines. He's not a downrange warfighter. He's the president of Ukraine. And I understand the image he's trying to give off. And I can easily take the criticism that Donald Trump wears his red MAGA hat all the time. It's part of political posturing. But the American taxpayer is looking at this and they feel a little bit miffed. And that certainly came out in the discussions you saw there with the reporter and Donald Trump, even when he got out of the thing, said, oh, that you dressed up for the occasion. So, I mean, it's there.
Well, you know, Churchill went to the White House in fatigues, too. And we know that Donald Trump is a big fan of Winston Churchill. Do you draw a comparison there?
You know, I wouldn't draw that comparison. I've also seen comparisons with Trump to Neville Chamberlain. So a lot of historical rewriting. I think Churchill, we're talking about the battle to defend London from Hitler and the very end of Western civilization. In this situation, we're talking about Eastern Ukraine. It's a much different situation. And while I commend Zelensky for doing his utmost to, in his mind, defend his country, in the end, he's having to come to the United States to solve that problem.
Mm-hmm. And, well, there are many more, Errol, who believe this is about so much more than Eastern Ukraine, you know, and what could flow from this could mean so much more to so many people. I mean, that really is what is at stake here. But let's bring in Donnacho at this point. Zelensky didn't read the room, is what Errol and plenty of others say too. What's your own take?
Okay, well, on reading the room, I think it's important to stress that the Trump administration isn't reading the European room. I think after the debacle, which we saw in the Oval Office and essentially Zelensky being told to leave the White House, which was a disgrace, you know, European leader after European leader came out with strong, unequivocal messages of support for Zelensky personally and for Ukraine as a country. And if the Trump administration doesn't read something to that, I think they're certainly not reading the room. And that included, by the way, their closest neighbours, Canada, who are also in London as well for this supportive meeting for Ukraine. In terms of this, the clothes that Zelensky was wearing, and this was a deliberate attempt by Trump and his sidekicks, who he's now using as so-called journalists in the White House to replace, you know, reputable entities like the Associated Press, because it was one of those pro-Trump kind of newbies that were, you know, spent a long time humiliating him, saying, "Do you even own a suit?" Errol's reference to costume—that's just simply a direct translation of the Ukrainian word for suit. He didn't use the word costume in any other context. And the thing is that, you know, the suit doesn't make the man. I mean, again, and they're very selective in how they approach this. Elon Musk turns up at cabinet meetings. The first cabinet meeting took place earlier this month. Elon Musk wears a baseball cap and jacket. He's not reprimanded. Indeed, he's elevated. Yeah, but Saudi princes come to the White House similarly. So I think it tells us something about the superficiality of this analysis and the American administration that, you know, essentially what Zelensky's wearing eclipses other things.
But I suppose we saw Keir Starmer going in there, and some would say he went against his nature by being overly effusive, being very touchy-feely with Donald Trump, you know, bending the knee, playing the game. And isn't that what President Zelensky needed to do? He just needed to play the Donald Trump game, and he didn't.
Well, I think it's not an exact comparison. Keir Starmer's country is not under murderous genocidal assault, as is Vladimir Zelensky. I mean, Donald Trump and J.D. Vance were very much in their comfort zone in the Oval Office, whereas Zelensky had come from a war zone where the very existence of the state is in question. And I thought it was very interesting what your commentator there said about, you know, World War II comparisons are not really appropriate in that London was kind of a center of civilization. Here we're only talking about Eastern Ukraine. You know, again, that rhetoric that Neville Chamberlain used, and he doesn't seem to like that comparison about Czechoslovakia, a faraway country about which we know little. Who cares for Eastern Ukraine is very much implicit in that. And by the way, England wasn't invaded in terms of a land invasion in World War II, whereas Ukraine, almost 20% is under Russian occupation.
Mm-hmm. To come back to you, Earl, Mike Johnson, who's the Republican Speaker of the House of Representatives, he says President Zelensky needs to come to his senses and come back to the table in gratitude, or someone else needs to run the country, needs to run Ukraine. Do you agree?
I agree. And I believe Zelensky has it in him to come back to the table, and he can be the man to bring peace to the table. But at the end of the day, I mean, there are other people in Ukraine. It's not as though Zelensky, one man, represents the entire country. So if he's unwilling to negotiate with the Americans, and let's say the Europeans fail to put this coalition together and he really does need the Americans, then it would behoove him to come back. I don't think he needs to apologize. I actually think it was very good that this happened out in the open. This was a very transparent sort of new age dialogue. Very interesting to see. I don't think he owes an apology, but he needs to come back to the table and needs to agree to sign the deal that he originally pledged to do. And I think if he does that, he'll get back in the good graces and we can work with him. I mean, this is, you know, friends should have open disagreements, I think.
Well, he has said he is ready to sign that US-Ukraine minerals deal. But how does he come back to the table? How does he fix this without an apology, Earl?
Well, I think that perhaps it's something that would be behind closed doors. I don't think that Donald Trump is looking to humiliate Zelensky further. I think perhaps he can come back to the table with the signing of the agreement in itself would be enough of an apology or enough of a remuneration situation. Donald Trump's looking to make a deal.
You say there that Donald Trump wouldn't be looking to humiliate him further. That would suggest that you believe Donald Trump humiliated Zelensky on Friday.
A little bit. I think that's a fair take. I mean, Donald Trump lost his temper with Zelensky, especially when Zelensky seemed to indicate that if we didn't help him, that we were going to feel the brunt here in the United States. That really touched a button on nerves on Donald Trump. So from that point on, he definitely was more hostile, and he did humiliate him to some degree. And that is sort of the art of the deal that Donald Trump brings to the table. He's an unconventional person. Mm-hmm. He's the first person who's not a statesman or a war hero to be the U.S. president. He's a businessman. And businessmen oftentimes are quite impolite.
And do you think that was wrong of Donald Trump to humiliate President Zelensky on Friday?
I don't think it was wrong, because Zelensky hasn't perhaps been the stand-up actor that his electorate had sent him there to negotiate with. And I think it was something that a lot of people around the world, you know, wanted to see somebody stand up and say, hey, wait a second, this is our money and these are real lives on the line. You saw how agitated Zelensky was when Trump referred to Russian lives also mattering. And while I understand Zelensky's perspective and purview being the victim of a brutal aggression, it is still dealing with Donald Trump as the humanitarian and not Donald Trump as some sort of bad actor in this situation. So I think the world can coalesce around a brighter tomorrow if we take Donald Trump at his word and we allow him to operate how he operates. If that means Zelensky's feelings get hurt for a little bit, he quickly got on the back foot, and I think it'll be okay. I mean, honestly, that's what you have to expect dealing with Donald Trump. It's not going to be conventional.
Now, this deal that is still on the table, the minerals deal, Donica, and what President Zelensky wants in return for this is a security guarantee. Do you think that's going to happen? Will the Americans be part of that, something like that?
No, I don't think they will. I think they've made that quite clear. I think we're seeing the disengagement of America from the collective West. And I think Ukraine is a litmus test for this. And I think that dramatic, you know, difference of reception that Zelensky received in D.C. and has received in London and indeed would receive in any European capital is emblematic of that. I think all the way what we saw on Friday was a dramatic crystallization of that. But I think even more important, perhaps, was the UN vote earlier in the week, where the U.S. aligned itself with Russia, with North Korea, with Belarus, and with other dictatorships, Eritrea, and on the other side of the table were its ostensible European allies. And that's the real divide. That's the real division that's there. I think we just saw it come out to the fore in the open. And this is the one point that perhaps I would agree with the previous speaker, that it's perhaps healthy that we do see it for what it is, rather than trying to pretend that there is no difference. There is a decisive difference. This administration is retreating from the West, and it wants Ukraine essentially to sacrifice its own interests to pursue its own naked self-interest in Ukraine and in Russia. This minerals deal is a good example of that. Rather than offering a Marshall Aid program of grants to help reconstruct Ukraine, which has been under murderous assault for years, it's looking for a shakedown. And that's the very first conversation that Donald Trump had with Zelensky back in 29 was a shakedown. It was an attempt to extort that administration to dig up dirt on Hunter Biden, and he was holding back congressionally approved aid for Ukraine. That was back in 2019. He's called Zelensky a dictator, an outrageous assertion. Outrageous. And yet he won't call Vladimir Putin the same term. This tells you where the true interests align in this U.S. administration. They are not with us. They are much closer in terms of temperament and in terms of interest. Donald Trump is much closer to Vladimir Putin than he is with a mainstream European leader.
Errol, is Donald Trump looking to shake down Ukraine?
No, I think that's a very unfair characterization. I mean, you have to keep in mind that Donald Trump wasn't president when this invasion happened. And the first time we started hearing about mineral rights was BlackRock and Western corporations. This deal was being talked about much earlier on than even at that point. Donald Trump was a very outside candidate. So this is just, I think, coming down to good governance. You want to create a joint venture between the American people and the Ukrainian people, so there's some sort of shared equity in the situation. Okay. Right now, you have a very far away land and American people who are struggling at home. You need to find some sort of incentive. So I don't think it's a shakedown.
All right, we leave it there. Thank you both, Errol Morcoach and Donika Obakon. Coming up after the break, can we expect other energy providers to follow SSE Airtricity and announce price hikes? Also, we'll have all the news from the Oscars and the after parties in LA.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.